Welcome to Sestercast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm re-watching this series for the third time. My co-host, Kathy Campbell, is watching for the first time, and so we make sure not to spoil any storylines beyond the episode we are currently discussing. Kathy, how's it going this week?
It's going great. I'm ready.
I'm ready
and raring to go.
I'm ready. Yes, we've had a little Sestra siesta the last couple of weeks because I wasn't feeling well. Then I was traveling and you weren't feeling well. And then yada, yada, yada. Now we are recording again because we're excited to be watching more episodes of Sestercast. And if we don't record episodes, we can't watch new ones. So
exactly. That's been the hardest part. This is the first time that I've watched an episode and taken notes, and then we had such a long delay before recording. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I can watch another. Nope, can't watch another episode. Yeah. I have to wait.
Because, boy, if you watched. So today we are talking about episode 2 from season 4. It's called Transgressive Border Crossing. And boy, if you had skipped ahead to another episode, you would really be confused this discussing this one.
Yes.
Because so many things happen, so many plot lines and characters bleeding over into other ones, in some case literally bleeding. And I think, it would have been tough. So, yes, let's get this one down and in the can, as they say, so that we can go on to watch the next one. Yeah. It's a very exciting episode, as pretty much every episode of Orphan Black is. And it opens this week in this episode with they're in Iceland, which we knew from the end of last episode 1 of season 4. Which was mostly a flashback of what happened with Beth, but introduced a new clone named MK. And MK warned them that their Iceland safe house was no longer safe. So this is picking up from that. And Sarah is packing up, and Mrs. S and Kendall are like, wait a second, you know, who's this MK? Why should we go?
Why should we trust her?
Right.
Because why would you trust some random person calling and telling you to go? And it was very, like, suspenseful because we have some trust for MK.
Right.
Thanks to the flashback that we see. But legitimately, Sarah's wants to trust her, but Mrs. S is understandably concerned about trusting some random person that called. Like, why would you trust that? And granted, it was from Art, so that makes it a little bit easier to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then Kira goes to the window and says, they're coming.
Yeah.
Which she manages to make the most peaceful, like, calm words, just like, it gets up to a level of not necessarily creep factor, mm-hmm. but like it can seem so much more concerning.
Yes.
And then you see the vehicles.
Yeah, like snow,
the lights.
Snow runners or whatever those things are called. Those,
yeah.
Go on snow instead of waves.
yes.
Snowmobiles.
Yes. Snowmobiles. That's the right thing. And, of course, Sarah's freaking out. You know, S, they can't find anything. They won't, not even an eyelash, Mrs. S says. She grabs these random tanks of gas that are hanging out inside the house, which doesn't seem like the most smart thing to do. But, you know, I make no judgments. Mm-hmm. And they're going to burn down the entire house so that there is no genetic material left. Unfortunately, this includes the death of Sock Monkey.
Sock
and that made
Monkey.
Me very sad.
Yes. Poor Sock Monkey. Yes, having cans of gasoline inside your house is not considered good practice in general. But if you are the caretaker of genetic material that evil people are trying to capture, then you just always have to be ready to burn the whole thing down.
Yes.
And in fact, that's a quote from Mrs. S, like, way back, and she meant it metaphorically, you know, but she said to Sarah at one point, if we're not safe, if Kira's not safe, then we burn the whole thing down and we start over. We can do it again. But she didn't mean literally at that point, but that's before.
She meant it now.
She meant it now. That's Miss S, Mrs. S. It's an all-purpose destroyer, if need be. And so then after the credits, they transition to naked butt. Felix is in his apartment. He's got a big painting apron on, and he's painting, but except for the apron, he has no other clothing on. And so while you're ogling his butt, you realize he gets a phone message, and he, looks at his phone, and then they move to Allison's house. She's doing an exercise video. I love that, Allison exercising to the exercise video.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Taibo too.
Oh, is that what it is?
That's what I'm thinking. That's what it reminds me of.
It just made me want to get some spandex and a ponytail holder and do some some
leg warmers.
Yes. Allison is great as usual. She also gets a message, and she says, I think she says, "Holy Dinah," or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they show Cosima, and she's like blissing out in a pot garden, indoor pot garden, right?
Yes.
And then her phone buzzes. She sits up, she looks, and then she goes, "Scott." And so that's we're assuming they all got a message that Sarah, Kira, and Mrs. S are back from Iceland. And then they show a street scene with a store called Rabbit Hole Comics. And it's a very grungy street, it's very urban and grimy even. And a big truck rolls up, a delivery truck, and as the delivery guy is opening up the back door of the truck, there's Siobhan again with a gun pointing it at him.
Right.
I was expecting to see a friendly face. And then Benjamin shows up, and she says, "Oh, Benjamin, well, any friend of Benjamin's." And so they take, then Kira, Kendall, and Sarah get out of the back of the truck. And I just love Kendall so much. I mean, because I love the actress, but I just love the character too, where she says, "I have two houses burned in, the space of 3 months and 18 hours in the back of bloody, pickup van. And now I just need a fag."
Yes. I love Kendall. So with Kendall's personality, you can see where Mrs. S came from.
Yes.
You can see the characters, you can see that development, which is just such great writing, but also such great acting that you can immediately understand things. And the way that Kendall comes out from the back of the truck is just so Kendall. It's right. So Kendall. And they go in, and Hell Wizard comes in and is like, "I take it you two aren't here for the newest episode of Rot and Ruin." And it's just, a great way to reintroduce everyone to the whatever city they're in.
Yes. I love Hell Wizard too. I'm glad to see him again. He had a little bit role in last season as well. He's, one of Scott's, game tabletop gaming buddies. And also, he was funny. I forget exactly what he said last season, but I remembered he has good lines when he's in. Just to scroll back a little bit, I did want to point out, because I figured you were probably tracking this, that Kira was not very happy because she asked, that Kira and Kendall were going to a safe house rather than into the comic book store. And Kira wanted to know if Cal would be there. And everybody looks at each other like, ooh, you know, I guess she's attached to that father of hers, you know.
I guess for some reason. And, I don't know why.
Sarah's like, no, you know, we said we aren't going to see him for a while. And she gets that look and she just, you know, marches away to the truck. She's going to be leaving with Benjamin and she's not talking to Sarah anymore. And I think, you know, we're definitely in for the tween Kira is coming on the scene.
Yes.
And she's not going to be quite all sweetness and light all the time anymore.
Right. Which is understood. You know, she's been handling all of these changes so well. And so much like an adult, it's about time she gets to be a child, even if that means pouting and similar attitude moments.
Yeah. So there's a lot to discuss about the rabbit hole and what all goes on there, and I can't wait to dig into it. But before we do that, I think we should talk about Donnie and Helena, because there's Allison is getting on the phone with, or not the phone, but you know, the video conferencing with her sestras. But as she's about to do that, Donnie's saying, like, you know, I'm taking Helena to a doctor's appointment. What should I tell her? And Allison's like, don't tell her that they are back. You know, she's taking up enough space and time as it is.
Yeah.
So that lets us know Allison is annoyed with Helena, just like general annoyance. And Donnie and Helena are going somewhere interesting. And it's the, you know, it's the obstetrician's office, I guess. You are really the expert on this. So I think you should talk about it more than me. But I just want to say, if you, I'm sure you notice there's like a whole bunch of Helena-isms in this one.
Yes. I love, so they're doing the ultrasound, and Helena is very excited, of course, and yet still goes, this looks like mush.
It looks like mush.
Which, if you've ever had an ultrasound, it legitimately looks like mush. Yeah. It's very difficult if you don't have someone kind enough to like help guide you with body parts. It's difficult to see what you're looking at, especially with how the age of them, which is, it's hard to judge.
Oh yeah.
How far along they are. But they seem to be fairly young at this point, based on the size and development. Of course, I'm no professional, but
you keep saying they, and what do you mean?
Because there's twins!
Yeah.
which is fantastic. So Helena gets to have twins, just like she and Sarah were twins, yeah. And that makes her super excited.
Yeah.
Because and they're identical twins as well.
Yeah, which I learned a thing, because when in that scene, when they said they were identical twins, I was like, you can tell that from the ultrasound. And then later on, Donnie's explaining it to Allison, and he said, they share the same placenta. That's how you know they're identical. I didn't verify this on the internet, but
that is that's true. Yeah. So the fraternal twins are separate eggs.
Correct. That I know.
And so identical twins come from the same egg, and then they split apart into separate babies to still grow. So the placenta is the connection to the uterus and the mama. And so they're sharing it because that's how they landed on the side.
That's how they landed.
Yes.
yeah, that is, that was really interesting to me. And, you know, I love to get educational value out of my TV binge watching habits. also, one thing about this scene, I just really touched me. I mean, I was a little teared up just watching them watch the ultrasound machine. And that includes Donnie, because he's all stressed out taking her to the doctors, and she's pretending to be Allison, but she's not doing a very good job of it.
No.
Because she keeps calling Donnie her boyfriend. And he's like, no, you're my wife, I'm your husband. And Helena just sort of saying random things like, you know, how, when asked how she's feeling, it's like, well, I'm tired and also many farts. And
yes,
but when Donnie's looking at the ultrasound, that's his first experience of that too. It's an experience he did not have, you know, with Allison. Yeah. And I think he was caught up in the emotion of it in a way he probably wasn't expecting to be, seeing these babies on the way. And, so the Donnie and Helena, you know, match up. I'm enjoying that very much because they are, very funny together, and she gets him in a way that Allison doesn't sometimes.
Right. Yeah. And their relationship is just so sweet. Mm-hmm. It's so kind. And it made me happy that Donnie got to experience, you know, an ultrasound and whatnot. And then he brings it home to show to Allison, because obviously he wants her to have the same experience, to have that same excitement. And you can just tell that she is not having that same excitement and mm-hmm. is having a very difficult time. This is a pretty great depiction of kind of like infertility guilt, mm-hmm. Where if someone can't provide their spouse with a child, they feel really bad about it. Mm-hmm. And they have that level of, oh, I can't be enough for you. I'm not enough to help and be with you. And on top of that is Allison having this feeling of, I've done everything right. You know, I have a husband. We have a job.
Yes.
Granted, they're not quite legal jobs, but still. And then here's Helena, and Allison says, this is Helena we're talking about. She eats frozen bread and she murders people.
Right.
And Donnie goes, yeah, well, so have we. To which, of course, Allison replies, that's different. Helena's trained to kill people. We're manslaughterers.
We're manslaughterers. I love that, too.
It was It was so, so poignant. And it says a lot about, you know, what Allison has gone through mentally.
Yeah.
'Cause she does have children and she loves her children so much and does everything that she can to take care of them. And yet there's still this guilt and this anger that Helena gets to be pregnant and she doesn't.
Yeah. And I do like that bit where, you know, Donnie is trying to, you know, say to her, are you upset about, the manslaughtering, or are you, is it something else? You know, are you upset because of our issues? And Allison's like, no, she's eating us out of house and home. And now she wants to do the crafts, you know, and she's, Allison in the crafts room is always fun, especially when she's putting things away.
Right.
She's got a lot of scissors right there at that moment. I'm like, uh-oh.
Yes.
And then Donnie just, he says, she just wants to be like you. And I thought, oh, that's true.
Yeah.
So that's some nice, happy news that we get. if you think having twins is happy news, which I think, you know, it is.
Yes, that, absolutely.
We get that. So now let's go swing back to all the bad news that we get in this episode.
Yes. You know, that's the great thing about Orphan Black is that, especially when you're talking about it bit by bit, is there is always some positivity in there.
Yeah.
Even in, you know, season finales where it's really intense and the world is crumbling and everything's coming down, there's usually something happy that happens. Mm-hmm. And that's really impressive.
Yeah. So, yeah, so getting back to Rabbit Hole Comics. So the existence of Rabbit Hole Comics is just fun. And that is one of the happy things as well in this episode, because, you know, when Cosima and Sarah are reunited and Sarah says, like, how are you doing? And Cosima's like, a secret lab under a comic book shop? What more could a girl want? And she means it. They're really excited to be yeah. there. And so while just on this one set, it just keeps rolling around like the corners of the room where people keep having like little conversations off to the side. But it starts with this video conference of Allison and Sarah and Cosima trying to figure out who is MK. And each of them is so fun. Allison especially she's making her schedule, you know, yes. and she's got her sticky notes and she's got her color-coded markers and some big chart. And it made me realize, like, organizational skills are not genetic.
Definitely not. It's I think it's definitely a nurture versus nature thing.
So yes, I'm not going to feel bad that I have never been that organized. Beth, Allison was the one who knew Beth the best of the three of them, and she said, you know, Beth didn't tell us everything. She was protecting us, you know. When Sarah says, like, a clone in a mask, a sheep mask, and that's when Cosima laughs, like, this hysterical crack up, and she's like, oh, and everybody, Sarah is looking at her thinking, what? Like, are you laughing at? And she says, you know, Dolly, the sheep, the, you know, famous originally cloned animal from decades yes. ago. Allison says, I don't find that remotely funny. she never liked the clone word to begin with.
Right. And she doesn't like the jokes about clones and whatnot. But also, she has a lot of pressure on her going on right now. And not just Helena and having Helena in her house mm-hmm. And Grace disappearing and all of these levels of stress. Yeah. But she's, you know, now that the campaign is over, she has to do that job of public service and, you know, the drug dealing.
I think the drug dealing is done.
Oh, that's right, because there's no drug supply.
It's just money now. It's the best yeah. kind of drug dealing. You just have a whole freezer full of money and no drugs to sell.
Yeah, but she's got to deal with all of the druggy moms that's who true. Are not having their supply anymore and blaming her.
Yeah, that can't be too pretty. Yeah, in fact, no. There's when Mrs. S is asking Scott about how they put together the whole secret lab under the comic book store, and Scott says, well, the Hendrixes, you know, they ponied up the cash for it. And I thought, sure, that's just reaching into the freezer, right. pulling up a handful of cash, and that should buy a comic book store and buy some furniture off Craigslist. So,
right.
It was really cute. Yeah. Basically Sarah's thinking she says, you know, to Cosima, I need to find out more about MK, because she was the key to what the, you know, knowing what the Neolutionists are doing, and we need to know what they're doing if we're going to fight back. So Sarah's going to spin off and talk to Art. And so they're in their diner, or I don't know if that's Fong's.
Yeah, I think it is. I recognize the carpet material okay. on the back of the seat. Okay.
And Art, you know, talks what he knows about MK, which is not much, except he says she sounded European. Sarah said she thought she sounded Scandinavian. We also get to see Sarah's face when she gets the file on the guy who had his cheek chopped out. Yes. And Art says, this is the last case that Beth and I caught. And she's looking, you know, the cheek is pretty horrifying. But then apparently she gets to see a picture of the modified dick. I call it, yes. Actually, I wrote down his name in my notes as modified dick dude because. And then Art says, hey, he's still got a key to Beth's apartment. He said, let's go look around there. And when they get in there, the most important thing they figure out, I mean, they're looking around and seeing stuff. They see the Neil Leeson book that Beth had gotten autographed by Dr. Leakey. So they knew that Beth was on to the Neil Leeson story. Sarah finds all Beth's drug paraphernalia where she used to tuck it up under the counter where Paul would never find it, I guess. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's Paul. But whatever.
Yeah.
And, but the most fruitful thing they do is they find the camera, the hidden camera, and thereby find the hidden video recordings of Beth and Paul. And they start watching those, and that's where we get some Beth flashbacks, which are really interesting because you go, is it? Oh, it's Beth. Yep, that's definitely Beth. This is, you know, so Beth, starting with Beth looking in the refrigerator and seeing, you know, some beer bottles and saying, I wasn't really expecting company, so I don't really have much to offer you. How about a beer? And so I just love that look of that scene where it's Beth's face in, you know, looking at the camera. The camera's in the back of the refrigerator. And then as she closes the door, changing the point of view, and as the door closes, it reveals that Duco is in her apartment.
Yes.
And that is scary. That guy is scary looking.
Yeah.
For looking like a mild-mannered Nebbish, he really does project a lot of menace.
Right. I feel like the Neos really hire the best types of people for that. They can, you know, they can blend in, be the union guy for the police that they're looking for, mm-hmm. and then also be extremely intimidating.
Yes. Yes, they get some scary types and some not so scary types, you would think. But yeah, he, Duco, also that name just gives me the chills.
Yes.
So yeah, he's basically come over to her place, to be saying, I know that you know that I know what you know, kind of deal. And, you know, subtly threatening her about,
right.
You know, that if she keeps picking at this scab, as he says, what does she think will happen? You know, and she said, what does she think she'll find out? And she says, that's the story of my life. And this is the first time where watching it for me, where I got it. Like, yeah, the actual story of her life is what she's looking for because she's looking into this whole cloning thing. And Duco right. gets the reference and he laughs evilly too. So that's one Beth flashback while there. Watching the surveillance tape, there's but eventually, yeah, they also see that whole scene of Beth holding the gun on Paul. That was really, really creepy to watch it from a totally different angle and also from a totally different emotional temperature.
Yeah, I got really emotional on that part because before you'd seen it and you knew that she didn't want to shoot him and he knew that she was going to shoot him. But it was all very intimate images, mm-hmm. Very close up with the face and whatnot. And so having it pulled back almost from a view of like a passive viewer just through the security camera, it was almost felt more emotional, mm-hmm. Because you knew how it ended, you knew what was going on, and you could just feel the emotions, and it was
yeah, especially with no audio, you know, no sound,
yes,
on that surveillance tape. So finally, they do see this Nia Lucian girl, which is the one who was pregnant, who Beth had met at the club, Nia Lucian, the one whose boyfriend had gone missing. She comes over to Beth's house, and it is very handy that these Nia Lucian people wear the one white contact, because yes. they can be recognized very easily on surveillance tapes.
Right.
At the morgue. And that's where Beth says, okay, I'm going back. You know, bye-bye, Art, you watch the rest of the tapes. I'm going to go back. I need to get back to where it all started. And then the next scene, she's at Felix's apartment. So
yeah, and this is Sarah, not Beth.
This is, right.
Yep. But yeah, you said Beth.
Did I say Beth? I'm sorry.
Yeah, actually, that's okay.
I did skip over the fact that Allison, when she first talked to Sarah, said, have you talked to Felix? You know, and Sarah's like, he won't return my calls. And then the next scene we see with Allison is Allison comes into Felix's apartment. And yes. It's a butt scene again. Boy, they really are like getting their, you know, money's worth.
Their Felix butt quotient.
And there is a funny line in there where he's painting some kind of penis design on the wall, and Allison says, is that a penis? And Felix is like, in art, it's called a phallus.
Yeah. All high and mighty. Yeah. It's cute.
So it's not much of a scene. It's just meant to show that Allison and Felix are still buds, and she's watching out for him because she's like, you haven't been answering your calls, mister. And I want to know how you are, and your family is back, and you're going to have to see them and tell them what you've been up to. So there's a little question mark that has been raised earlier on. So in the next scene there with Felix, Sarah surprises him while he's in the shower, which was mean, yes. But that's Sarah, like that's that treating your baby
that
brother.
That sibling relationship.
So it was funny. But again, I often feel sorry for Felix and I want to pop Sarah, you know, one say, like, don't you realize how, you know, how self-absorbed you are when you're not yeah. recognizing that your brother has some issues going on? And he even said to her, can you give me some space? You know, she's sort of crowding around him while he's getting dressed. And he's not ready to be all, you know, sibling cuddly with her just yet. So she says, let's go get a drink. And he thinks she means down at the bar that they usually go to. And she's like, nope. And they take them to Club Nia Lucian.
Right.
Poor Felix. He didn't Felix even want to go out for a drink. He definitely didn't want to go to Club Nia Lucian.
Right. And definitely doesn't want to have to sneak Sarah in the back and pay cover.
Yes.
And so Sarah pays, hands him cash, thankfully. But you could tell Felix is just over it. And yet he still does it. He still helps.
Yes. So Sarah is, once she gets in the back of Nia Lucian, she's asking around, showing people the photo she took of the surveillance tape of the pregnant girl, and trying to find somebody who knew her. Felix is just hanging out at the bar.
Right.
And Sarah comes around and sort of needles him for not helping her. And he's like, listen, I have my own issues, you know. I've been looking for my birth family. And Sarah's just clueless, like, what? I'm, you know, your birth family, Sarah. Or that's your family. Me, S, Kira, that's your family. And he's like, no, that's your family and you're related to everybody, including our foster right. mother, which I hadn't thought about, like how that changes the dynamic of Felix and Sarah, you know, by finding out that Kendall, the source of their genetic material, is also the mother of Mrs. S, does make Sarah genetically related to Mrs. S.
Right.
But I also didn't really think about it before, is that when he says you're related to everybody, it's like, yeah, Sarah has an unknown number of, you know, family members, if you think of it right. that way. And Felix has zero genetically related people. So, so Felix that's his thing that, you know, he was mentioning, or Allison was mentioning, is that he's looking for his birth family, and that's, I'm sure, will lead to some interesting stuff in the future.
Yes.
Meanwhile, this dude comes up to Sarah and thinks she is MK, because apparently he was going to meet up with MK, and he's like, wow, you couldn't wait to see this, huh? Well, I'll show it to you now. And he shows her something so gross, I don't even know if I want to talk about it, but it's not going away, so
no,
we might as well get over it. But we already knew about the worm. We had seen the worm before.
Yes.
So this is a video, but Sarah didn't know about the worm.
Right.
Now she does.
Oops. Now she totally does. So you don't scream.
Yeah, that's it. Nervous laughter. Yeah. So this dude, you know, big scruffy beard dude guy, shows her a video of somebody where they're trying to remove the worm, and it kills the person in the process, and it's very graphic. And then, you know, Sarah asks, like, what does that worm do? And then the guy's getting suspicious because it's MK who knew about the worm and wanted to know, like, wanted him to find
more.
So it's like that moment where somebody realizes, like, maybe this isn't the person. Who are you? You know, and she, Sarah, runs out and grabs the dude's phone. I didn't even see how she did that. And saw magic. His text with MK, where MK said, let's go meet up at this laundromat, basically. And let's just say one thing. This show, this episode, has many cuts.
many
scenes that consist of one line of dialogue and then moving to somewhere else. And we are doing our best to make it into a cohesive whole for the podcast, but there's going to be some jump cuts of our own, I'm sure. I feel like, you know, the next thing I just want to talk about is Sarah going to that laundromat, and her phone rings and MK says, you shouldn't be here, Sarah, you know, and MK is watching her from a surveillance camera, because of course that's MK's superpower. She can hack into everything.
Right.
And she's wants Sarah to put her other phone in the dryer, take her boots off and put them on the counter. Why do you think she asked her to do that?
That one was weird.
Yeah.
That one was really weird. I have no idea.
I mean, I could your boots be bugged? That wouldn't make a difference whether you were wearing them or not.
Right. Like, maybe so she couldn't just run away, or like maybe so she couldn't run out to see, because we eventually find out that
MK is watching.
That MK is just right outside. So maybe it means that she's going to be a slower mover. So she'll be like a one up on Sarah. But I don't. Yeah, that was really weird.
Okay.
Really weird.
And of course, Sarah has 100 questions for MK, but she really doesn't want to talk to it. And she says, I can't talk to you anymore, you know, it will kill you like it killed Beth. So, you know, you get the idea. This information is really dangerous and powerful, and we're starting to get closer to understanding what happened to Beth, really.
Yeah.
And there's a flashback, which is kind of important to roll in here because it involves MK and Beth. And Beth, we saw in the surveillance tape, had put on a blonde wig and went out. And even as Art's watching, you know, the surveillance tape, he's like, what the hell are you up to, Beth? So we don't, you know, see where she goes, but we do see her come back and she's got bloody hands and MK shows up surprising her. And MK has been worried because she hasn't heard from Beth in 4 days. And Beth is completely distraught. And she says, you know, it's over. It's done. I'm done. I screwed it up. We can't fight anymore. You know, MK, you should just drink iced tea and play video games and stay hidden. And MK says, please don't leave me. I need you, which I'm just like, no, I'm so sad for you now.
I know.
And she comes back. Beth turns around, comes back and says, like, watch the others for me. And oh, and then of course Beth is going off to the train station. Once you recognize like the clothes and the makeup and the expression she has on, like,
you know,
did you have that moment?
The timing.
Like, yeah, I was.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I thought at first when she put on the blonde wig before, and you know, puts the gun in the purse and all of that, like, I was like, oh, is this the time? No, that's not the time, because she's wearing the same outfit. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, this must be it. And then it wasn't, obviously. But she comes back and I was like, oh, no, this is it. Mm-hmm. This is the true way to say goodbye to Beth, is to see the behind the scenes before she jumps in front of the train.
Yeah. So that's when we switch back to the present with MK and Sarah. And MK says, like, that's the last time I saw her. And Sarah's like, what did she know? You know, was it those maggot bots? So that's what we'll be calling them from now on.
Yes.
The maggot bots. And MK is like, it's just too dangerous. I can't talk to you about it. And at that moment, that's when Sarah realizes that MK is in a car right off, you know, right outside. And she drives off, and Sarah cannot run after her because she doesn't have her boots on. That probably answers that question. But at the same moment, those evil paramedics show up. Like,
I know.
I wasn't expecting them.
Yeah, so I had the closed captioning on. And learned that they were speaking Afrikaans.
Yes, me too.
So they're most likely from South Africa.
Yeah.
Which was a very interesting, like, just bit thrown in. Was not expecting that. Mm-mm. And they're, you know, throw Sarah down and they're looking at her cheek.
Yeah. He reaches his finger inside her mouth.
I
was so surprised, because at that moment when they show up, I think, well, Sarah will get out of this. And part of me was like thinking, oh, Helena will show up, you know, with her super spidey sense and she'll beat them up. But then I thought, nah, that wouldn't be a very good idea. And that I didn't really expect that they would pin her down and, you know, be trying to figure out who she was. And, anyway, they thought she was MK. That was that was clear because MK was supposed to be there, not Sarah.
Yep.
And then they leave.
And the fact that they don't, because
that was weird.
It was very weird, and I was just like, why? How did they know that they were looking for someone else, that it wasn't her by the cheek? And then, of course, I'm thinking the same thing that Sarah's thinking, because she's looking for a maggot bot herself.
Well, yeah.
Like, she's digging in Kira, checking Kira's cheek.
This is the final scene, and it's really disturbing because
yeah.
she storms into the safe house, Benjamin's like, wait, you know, we have a protocol. And I'm thinking, yeah, don't mess up the protocol.
Don't mess up the protocol.
But she's like, you know, in the bathroom. And then she's like, I need a torch. She's like, what did they do to us at Dyad? Oh, even Kira was there. And she's trying to look in Kira's mouth. And it's so like, you know, she's not at all paying attention to how she's freaking Kira out and thereby freaking Mrs. S out. And so finally Mrs. S says, like, I will come on, you know, and she helps her, you know, in lining up a flashlight and against her cheek from the inside. And Mrs. S is looking and they do see a maggot bot. She does see a maggot bot and she's like, oh, you know, oh my God. Like, you rarely see Mrs. S go like, oh my God. And it's not like the most comforting words. I don't know if that those were her exact words, but it was that that moment where you might want to say, all right, we're going to figure out how to deal with this. Not, oh, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. It just, yeah.
So
it's horrible because let's up the drama, yes, because of course, you know, it's the second episode of a new season. So we're going to have a new timeline because we're done with the caster clones. We're done with the drug dealing. Let's see what else we can throw in here. And it's maggot pots
that
apparently can leap out and attack the hosts like a side. Yeah. No, thank you. No,
thank you. So that pretty much wraps it up for another week of Orphan Black. At least we got happy ultrasound.
Yes. Yay, twins. Yay, twins. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of SestraCast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoy talking together. Feel free to leave a review and let other fans of Orphan Black find our podcast on iTunes and where all of your podcasts can be found. You can find us online. We are at SestraCast.com and we're part of the Incredible Incomparable Network. You can find us on Twitter at SestraCast. Jean is at MacGenie and I am at Mrs. Soup. And we hope you have an absolutely fantastic day.